Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Corey Connor, Sustainable Packaging Consultant, Landsberg Aurora, and Jonathan Quinn, Director of Market Development and Sustainability at Pregis.
Thank you so much. Waste Expo, it's my honor to be here. My name is Corey Connors. I'm a Sustainable Packaging Consultant and also the host of a podcast called Sustainable Packaging with Corey Connors. I want to thank Liz, who's not here. We've talked about her quite a bit tonight. She's amazing, and she has invited us all to this great event to hopefully make changes in this environment of packaging and waste and help scurry on with sustainable packaging. So I've been in packaging for 24 years. Since I was 18 years old. Please don't do that math. I am an old man. I've worked for, very thankfully, companies that really care about sustainable packaging, like Weyerhaeuser and Landsberg and Aurora, based out of Melbourne, Australia. And I met Jonathan Quinn recently, over the last maybe 6 months or so, in Clubhouse Rooms. It's a new social media app where we talk about different topics. And I host a room weekly about sustainable packaging. And Jonathan came in talking about plastics. And I truly believe that plastic and paper, which I usually represent in our discussions, can both be very sustainable. And sometimes it's more sustainable to have plastic packaging. It all depends on what you're doing and how you're doing it. So I spent the last year making videos on TikTok, believe it or not, about sustainable packaging. And what I found through this process is people really care about sustainable packaging. Companies and individual startups, they really want to try to be sustainable and make a big difference in this world. They're tired of the same old mistakes, in my opinion, that we've been making with packaging. So that's what we're here to help with. If you're interested in any of those, my handle is at Corey Gated, which is a play on words and a nickname I got while working at Weyerhaeuser when I was a kid. As a consultant, I've spent many, many hours in working with these small companies and big companies about how do we become sustainable. And there's a lot of changes that companies can make. And a lot of these changes are very simple, nuanced changes, like smaller boxes or not ordering 10 sizes of boxes when you can order a multi-depth score box that will accommodate all of your items that you're shipping. These little things can make a huge difference in the success of a sustainability program at a company. Why doesn't everybody use sustainable packaging? And that's a big question that I get often asked, and it's a one-word answer usually, and that's cost. But I'm here to say that in my opinion and in my recent and long experience with sustainable packaging, it can actually represent a cost savings, which is incredible to think about. But if you are using smaller boxes and using less materials, I had a customer come to me and say, I need a cost reduction on our packaging materials. And I said, well, we can't lower our margin. We have a great partnership, we have a great deal, but I'm gonna show you how to use less. And so I went in there and I showed their packers how to use less void fill on every shipment. And we were able to reduce their costs by 30% because they just used corrugated and paper void fills. And through those changes, they were very happy with what we did, and we went from oftentimes three pallets a month of material to two, And this was very sustainable. And so oftentimes I say the most sustainable packaging is less packaging or no packaging if you can get away with it. So different ways to be sustainable with packaging, use less material, like I said. What happens when you use sustainable packaging is oftentimes your customers will be thrilled by it. And they will post online. You know, we all have seen the Instagram posts of, hey, check out this new box I just got, or this really cool package that I just received from so-and-so company. This will translate often into more business because consumers really care about the sustainability of the packaging that you're sending them. And that can go the opposite way too. If you are shipping something that's not sustainable, I saw an example the other day of someone who was trying to do a good, sustainable thing using a reusable straw. It was packaged in 3 separate layers of plastic. And they were really upset by that and posted about it, and that got reshared over and over. I saw it on LinkedIn and Instagram, and this is the problem. If, you know, that could have very easily been shipped in a paper envelope. Those things are very durable. It's true that our customers and our consumers want to be sustainable with packaging. And I'm really here to help bridge that gap between us and help the recyclers and the packaging community come together so we can make this thing work as a viable ecosystem of packaging that is sustainable. Only 38% of Americans have access to recycling. That's a problem. That's a real issue that we need to address. That's only 50 million people, or I'm sorry, 50 million households in America. That's just frankly not enough. We need to work together to make that improved. There are some companies that I'm really excited about that are using an Uber-style method to pick up waste from houses and apartment complexes and schools. These two companies that I'm thinking of are Ridwell and Recyclops. If you haven't heard of them, I highly recommend checking them out. They're very interesting and doing great things in this space. I personally live in Portland, Oregon, where we recycle just about everything, but there were some gaps in that where we had to call Ridwell, and they pick up our plastic overwrap packaging. They pick up our plastic clamshells, PETE, and they actually recycle them. And that's a huge deal for me. I don't want to wish cycle. I don't want to just put it in the blue bin and hope. So there are people doing good things to change. What can packaging companies do to make packaging easier to recycle? We think we know a lot of ways, but I'd love to learn more from you guys. So I'm open to connecting. Please reach out to me. Tell me what we need to do as packaging suppliers. The company I work for is a global company, $3.8 billion packaging company, and we really want to make a difference. We want to do things that are the best for this world, for this environment. So we're here to connect and really would appreciate that. In 2020, 38 million tons of paper was produced in the U.S. We only recycled 23 million tons. Recent demand could mean that 42 million tons of paper is made this year, 2021. This is giant spikes in demand for packaging materials, paper, especially plastics. It's just going through the roof, and we need to act quickly to figure out how to bring this material back, and I know Waste Management is doing a really good job, and other companies are really working hard to bring these materials back into the system to be recycled. Like I said, demand for packaging is unprecedented. I've never seen this in my career. Packaging is, it's on us as packaging providers to label our packaging that we provide to consumers so they know what to do with it. And that's something I'm often preaching to our team and to our company. Hopefully through education and just training, we can figure out how to do this. There, I think howtorecycle.info was mentioned in one of the previous talks. That's a great resource, and I really recommend checking that out. We talked about extended producer responsibility earlier. This is absolutely changing the game. Oregon, where I live, which was actually the first state in our country to provide the bottle bill, where we have a 5-cent deposit on cans, has now been one of the first states to adopt this EPR mandate. I think it's just on our governor's desk about to be signed. So Oregon and Maine are the first two that I'm aware of. I think more and more will follow suit. And so this will absolutely provide some positive steps. I hope it becomes a positive change. I'm sure most of you know what EPR is. Extended producer responsibility is basically require packaging producers to be focused on making packaging that can be recycled and making sure that it actually does get recycled. Any pizza lovers out there? Me too. There's been a lot of confusion on these boxes. What do we do with them? Can we recycle them? Are they too full of cheese? Are they too full of grease? The answer is very good. I'm excited to say, yes, we can recycle these. Westmark Packaging just did a study on this, and these corrugated boxes are recyclable. It's very exciting. If we can get the consumers to make this change and recycle these boxes, it's gonna make a huge difference. $3 billion pizza boxes are made every year. That is a massive number. That's 600,000 tons of corrugated. That's about 2.6% of our OCC, our old corrugated carton stream. We need to collect our junky old pizza boxes. This is vital to our system of packaging. We need the OCC. We're running short of it in our system to make more boxes. 73% of recycling programs don't even have clear instructions as to what you can do with pizza boxes. People ask me all the time, can I recycle these? And I say, well, technically yes, but I don't know if your particular municipality will allow it. So as recyclers, please let your consumers know what to do with these boxes. They're made from very high quality corrugated and they can be recycled over 7 times, which is really awesome. So keep ordering pizza, keep recycling your boxes. Anybody here received a box that looks like this lately on their front porch? Anybody received a box or an item packed in a box that was packed in a box that had void fill that was packed in a box? Raise your hands. Yes, me too. It's a problem. And we are working as packagers to solve these problems and to educate the people that are sending you these monstrosities. How do we do this better? That little blue box could have been packed in a very tiny box and shipped safely with no problem. So it's sad to me when I see stuff like this, but it's been all over the Instagram feeds and the LinkedIn feeds this last year. We're working hard to rectify this, I promise. So how can we be sustainable with packaging? There's lots of great ideas. One of my favorites is called Giami paper, and it's a paper alternative to plastic bubble wrap. I've converted many, many customers to that, and successfully and happily they've converted, and not only can it be a cost savings, but their customers are very happy. And it's a very elegant looking packaging too, so something to consider. Another couple options I'll go over real quick: polyethylene instead of polystyrene, paper tape instead of vinyl tape, bio peanuts instead of styrofoam peanuts, mono materials, which I'm sure Jonathan will speak to, instead of multi-materials, and many, many more. We can also right size and eliminate unnecessary packaging like this. It's just ridiculous. You can also use multi-depth boxes, which I spoke of earlier. I want to touch on something that a few people have already spoken about, and that's circular packaging. Companies like Loop Packaging are very interesting. I'm excited to watch that happen. They're already using Häagen-Dazs ice cream in Europe as an example of how this can be a successful program, where you buy the ice cream in an aluminum container, then you bring it back to the store, they wash it, and then they refill it with more ice cream. To me, that makes a lot of sense. Reusing is absolutely above recycling. Of course, there are advantages and disadvantages. Paper is heavier than plastic, but with the right corrugated carton, I think, to me, that's where it all makes sense, as a smaller box equals less freight. Last thing here is PackTech. This is near and dear to my heart. This is from my hometown in Oregon. And what they've done is they've taken old milk jugs, HDPE, and they've recycled them into carriers for beverage cans and other things. I'm sure you've seen them at Costco holding your multi-pack of ketchup or fruit punch. Essentially, what they've done is developed a closed loop where they've asked their customers to bring them back to the pub or to the store where they bought them, and then they'll recycle them again over and over and over again. And it's working really well. They've already saved 600 million milk jugs from the waste and 400,000 pounds recycled per year. So I truly believe that we can be sustainable with our packaging. And I'm excited to hear from my friend Jonathan here. Thank you all. I'm looking forward to the Q&A at the end of this. After Jonathan speaks, we'll have a dual Q&A session. Thank you so much. I'm Corey Connors. That's it.
So Corey's a tough act to follow, and I always hoped one day that I would be able to hang out and be on stage with a social media influencer like Corrugated here. I do want to thank Liz, and it is really funny. Like Corey said, I first met Liz on Clubhouse, met Corey on Clubhouse, and I've been on Liz's podcast, and we've talked a number of times, and Liz has been this voice, and we've gotten along great, and the conversations have always been great, and so I was really looking forward to seeing Liz today. But she's obviously not here. So I've come up with this kind of, she is this I've never seen her. She's like this mythical, she's almost like Charlie from Charlie's Angels. So what I'm gonna say is that Corey and I are Liz's angels, or sustainability angels, I guess you could call us. But wanted to start this conversation, and I mean, I know I'm probably one of the first plastic guys to be up here talking to you today, but I wanted to give you a perspective of why I'm so passionate about flexible packaging and plastic flexible packaging, and why sustainability is so important to me. So this is me in 1989, the one with the mullet, that's me. The other guy is my dad. So I'm the third generation of my family in the plastics and packaging industry. But why sustainability is so critical and important to me, and growing up around the industry, I always wanted it. I went to school, I studied packaging, but I always wanted to be better and do more than my dad did. My dad didn't do a good job when it came to advancing sustainability as it pertained to flexible packaging. And at the end of the day, I want to give more to my daughter and my son. And the funny thing is that I'm the exact same age as my daughter is today. So I'm sure that you can all see these benefits that flexible packaging provides us on an everyday basis as a consumer. Lightweight, shelf life extension, sustainability, Convenience. Convenience is king when it comes to flexible packaging, when it comes to packaging in general. And product variety. This is flexible packaging can cater to all different types of products across the board. That's the true benefit of flexible packaging. And it's packaging security and it's product integrity. All of those things are key to what the value of flexible packaging is. Now let's focus for a second on the sustainability benefits. And one of the things that was talked about we've talked, I mean, it's talked in great detail. And I want to take a step back. So I mentioned that I went to school for packaging. And I've been in social media looked at as the plastics guy. But I'll tell you the truth. There is many applications where plastic isn't needed. I fully, fully support that. But there is science and there's factual-based reasoning why plastic and flexible plastic packaging is critical to making everyday life possible and the positive impacts that it has on the environment. That is critical. But the conversation around removing plastic. So let's say you remove 10 million pounds of plastic material. It's the alternative is going to take 40 million pounds to do the same job. So when you think about the total life cycle analysis and the overarching impact, plastic packaging has a place, and it's critical to making sure that the negative and overarching negative impacts on the environment, plastic has a place to play there. One of the key things, and when I talked about science and fact-based reasoning why plastic packaging is so important, it is shelf life. It is reduction of food waste. The amount of food waste on a global basis, that an issue that we have as it stands today, you eliminate plastic, you eliminate flexible packaging from that conversation, it's going to get a whole lot worse. And the impact on the environment is going to be tremendous. So I mentioned one of the ways that I want to beat my dad was he didn't tackle the sustainable, flexible conversation. And the reality is, when you look at the timeline, so it was 2013 that SPC first launched the How to Recycle. It was a soft launch. And that was the first kind of real push, I think, to the industry to make some changes. In 2015, the first all PE pouch came onto the market. And that is in reference to something that Corey talked about, and that's elimination of mixed material. That is not something that just happens overnight. It's not something that you can just do because you want to. You've got to formulate, you've got to build these film structures in order to do that. And there is some detriment in some ways as far as shelf life is concerned. You have to make changes and changes to the supply chain and a number of other different things. So then you progress forward to 2017 when Envision first got FDA approval for PCR, so post-consumer recycled resins. That was just in 2017. 2019, the first recyclable pouches with EVOH. I think sometimes I forget how 2020 actually happened, but it's 3 years ago. And I'm telling you all this because flexible packaging is in its infancy on its sustainability journey. There's tremendous opportunities moving forward. There's tremendous opportunities when it comes to what flexible packaging can further become, the innovations that are taking place. some of the benefits that I kind of breezed past on the previous slide in regards to lightweighting and things like that, you cannot ignore those. And the conversation was that what I think we really need to understand is that plastic is not evil. And the companies that make plastic are not evil. And as somebody who works for a flexible packaging company, a plastic packaging company, but we also, at Pregis, we also make products that are not plastic. But the point that I'm trying to make is that we all can agree that plastic doesn't have a place to play in the environment. That is not what any of us want. That's not what any of us want to see happen moving forward. And so we have to make these changes and improvements and embrace the benefits and the values of these materials and find ways to ultimately get towards and move towards a circular economy. So I wanted to talk about the Pregis purpose, because I'll let you guys all in on a little secret. Today's my third day with Pregis. So cat's out of the bag on that one. But everything that we do, it comes down to three things, and it's protect, preserve, and inspire. And Pregis isn't brand new to me. I interned for Pregis. Pregis was a customer of mine. But I can tell you that I'm 100% fully bought in to what we're doing and what we're bringing forward and advancing the flexible, sustainable packaging conversation. But when it comes to protection, it's about protecting the environment and it's about protecting products. So some of you may have heard Pregis in the past, and they were traditionally known as a protective packaging company. Now we were playing also in the flexible packaging area, providing flexible films and a number of different things. So we're not just protecting the environment, we're protecting the products, and we're ultimately protecting people. Preserve is all about reducing and eliminating unnecessary materials, movement towards carbon neutrality, and doing a lot of innovative things to making those sorts of things happen. And the thing that I think matters most to me, and I think it was discussed earlier, but it's the people. People are why we do everything that we do. Whether it's the consumer, whether it's our employees, whether it's our family, it's all about people. That's why we do what we do. And Pregis is doing more than just putting a few words on a slide. It's committing money. It's creating opportunities. So Pregis has an Inspire brand. This brand has a particular blue tint to it. And so there's some plastic, I call it the air pillows that you were showing, and bubble as well. Now, why am I mentioning that is because what we're doing is we're partnered with an organization called Uzima. And Uzima brings water filtration to at-risk areas of the world, but also natural disasters. And they deliver water filtration to areas where they don't have access to clean water. And it's something that we take for granted. So all of the proceeds from this brand go to helping and provide Uzima and enabling clean drinking water across the world. Pregis has the focus and the commitment, and it's about to positively impact 25 million people's lives. That is an aspirational goal, and we're going to do that and be able to do that through the delivery of our sustainable and flexible packaging. So my handle is not as good as corrugated, so I'm just Jay Quinn Packaged, but that's what everybody knows me as. But I would love to have conversations. I would love to be able to have discussions, conversations. Ultimately, it's about conversations and discussions that create opportunities. I let the cat out of the bag earlier that this is my third day, but I've been in the sustainability, I've been in the packaging world, I've pictures of me in a box of resin when I was 2. So this is not new, but the role is new. But my ask and I'm being sincere, is that Pregis is here to partner. We're here to collaborate. We're here to find solutions and work together, because at the end of the day, the sustainability conversation doesn't have a silver bullet. It doesn't exist. It's about collaboration and partnership that we are going to be able to get our way out of it. They talked about, we should just blow up the recycling and we should just recreate it. That's easy to say, but what it's gonna take is collaboration and partnership to make it happen. So if you have interest, if you're looking for partners, come see me, see Corey, reach out. You find me a lot of different places, but that's what it's gonna take. And Corey represents a side of packaging that can be different, but Corey plays a lot of different sides of the fence. That's what's good about Corey. So please take note to when you need partners, when you're looking to collaborate and advance the circular economy and really advance the overarching environment, come to Pregis. We will be here to help.
For flexible plastics, what's the back end piece of it then? So I see all the front end environmental, right? The less packaging, lower emissions, whatnot. But then once the consumer receives that packaging.
Yeah. So great question, and that's what I talked about, the opportunity to collaborate and partnership, because at the end of the day, the infrastructure and the system as it stands today, grocery store drop-off is not a solution. It's not.
And that's what flexible plastic, that's where it could go.
That's where, yes.
It has to go if you want it to actually be recycled.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is kind of like an idea or a perspective. So when you look at what the past 18 months has taught us all, is that further people are going toward e-commerce. And so prior to the pandemic, if you looked at per household in the US, it was 150 home parcel deliveries per year. Now it's probably closer to 200 parcel deliveries per year. And I mean, the amount of Amazon deliveries that I get today, it's a lot. But why do I bring that up? I bring it up for one very particular reason, is that as a consumer is going towards e-commerce, and we're coming and we're saying, the only opportunity that you have to recycle is for you to go and get in the car and go to the store that you've just avoided. And if your flexible mailer or your void fill, you're gonna go take that to the grocery store that you've been avoiding, that completely goes against why e-commerce has grown so much. It's the convenience. We've got to establish ways to make recycling of flexible materials more convenient. So when I bring that up, furthermore, though, is that's 200 opportunities per household to pick up those flexible materials. Because what's happening with all those Amazon delivery vehicles? They're going back empty. There's ways that we can make this happen, but it's not just collecting it isn't going to solve the problem, because you got to do something with it. Now, we can talk and we can debate all of those potential opportunities, because they're there. And when you eliminate the mixed material conversation, you're able to make that a reality, and you're able to, through that, enable a circular economy. But it's got to be convenient. And at the end of the day, I don't think there's anybody in here that says that they don't want a convenient consumer experience when it comes to anything.
I have two thoughts that are separate from each other. The pizza box thing. I'm really, you know, I love the idea that we can recycle pizza boxes. We were talking about that on the business I work on with our Murph, who says, I'm angry at the large multinational paper company in our town who advocated for that, who helped push for that.
Wow.
Because I don't want, because I as a Murph don't want old pizza boxes, because my bales get on a boat and go to Asia. And when it shows up in Asia and it smells like pizza, they throw them back, or, you know, pizza, whatever, you know, they don't want it. So I'm kind of curious, and maybe Waste Management actually would have some thoughts on this. How much of the recycled OCC bales in which the pizza boxes would go, what percentage of that goes to domestic paper mills, and what percentage of them goes overseas? Does anybody know that?
I don't know those exact numbers, but I know that a lot of it gets exported. I personally love the smell of pizza, so I'm not sure about that objection. But I understand where you're coming from, and probably the bigger problem is, the contaminants of just mold or something like that. I don't know, you know, from cheese or something. I don't know. But if my understanding is that WestRock did the study and have concluded that as it goes into the recycler through the recycling mill, it makes, at the end of the line, makes a great product. My understanding is that we have a short supply in our country, in USA, for recycled material. We need more paper here. We need more OCC. And that's why I think we can come together and work as recyclers and packaging companies to meet in the middle and make it attainable for this as a solution. It's a major issue, and I think it's a solvable one. I'm very optimistic, and to a fault probably, but I think we can work together to make it work. I'm very interested in your packaging solution that you have, so I'd love to talk to you after the show.
This is Susan Robinson with Waste Management, and if I could just comment, and Corey, I want to support what you just said in response.
Thank you.
In that, if you look 5 years back, we've always kept most of our recyclables as an industry, not just a company, in the U.S. It was about 63% of all our material was recycled domestically. And I sometimes think we forget about that when we talk about the export versus domestic. Now we're over 80% of all our material stays domestic.
Wow.
Very little goes to export. And to your point, the demand right now, after China's closed its doors, the demand has modulated in the U.S. and it has evolved to be able to take that we've grown, paper mills have grown their demand, and the demand for cardboard is insatiable right now because of all the different shipping and the growth of the economy. So very little is going export right now. And the paper industry came together, the mills came together to create a campaign asking for people to please put their pizza boxes into their recycling carts because they really need the cardboard right now. It's a very concerted effort for supply to pull the supply through. So I guess my comment when I was listening to you is, you know, your local Murph might want to reconsider where they're selling their material. And
right.
I don't want to, you know, it's a global economy, absolutely, and that will never change. It should never change. But we do have a growth in the domestic demand here, and there really is, you know, there's a lot of market demand, and it's continuing to grow for cardboard in particular, paper and cardboard.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, hi, thank you both and everybody who's spoken so far. My name is Greg Rulifson. I actually work for the U.S. government in humanitarian assistance, U.S. Agency for International Development. It's a little different perspective than probably many here. But my particular challenge that I've been working on the last couple of years is dealing with our solid waste and particularly packaging that ends up in the humanitarian assistance sites, so in humanitarian disasters or long-term ones like in Yemen or in Ethiopia, typically don't have very robust solid waste management systems. So kind of two questions here, and if we don't have time, maybe just pick one of them. But one is, like, we have a lot of domestic supply that we ship abroad, and so we've been trying to figure out our entryways to work with those packaging suppliers. We have polypropylene bags for bulk grain, but then we also have some multi-material and new that we're calling hybrid bags for some of the milled products that we send. And we're trying to encourage getting better supply that we can actually do something with at the end, or somehow, you know, some extended producer responsibility, but it really, it gets complicated. The other question, so just any advice you have for working with those suppliers that are a bit old school, as they have contracts with the USDA. and then the other one is, we have a lot of cardboard that we send as well. And right now, mostly gets burned. It's pretty valuable that way. But we'd like to encourage, kind of like we do here, that it's a really valuable asset to keep using again and again. And there's really not much of a cardboard recycling industry. So I don't know if you have any examples or ideas kind of as a encouraging a startup industry, maybe at some central hub that we can connect with just for dealing with that cardboard in a way that's a bit more environmentally responsible. Thanks a lot.
Corrugated, you want to take the cardboard?
We need your corrugated. We need it. As an industry, like Susan said, we absolutely must have it. We're running low. So please connect with the paper mills that use OCC. Cardboard, corrugated, it's all needed. We need all of that paper back into the system. It can be made into new boxes. It can be made into new all kinds of things out of paper. Even the worst, nastiest, greasiest boxes, like I said, will be made into new boxes. So I think we might be over time. I'm getting the wave over there. No. Okay. Plastic?
So your question was basically, how can you enable recycling of those materials, or is that essentially? So the mixed materials, that's a different conversation, but as far as some of the mono materials, and I kind of missed the part where you were talking about the FDA. What was that associated with?
We just have kind of old school suppliers. So
okay. More recyclable materials and probably incorporation of recycled materials as well. So I can tell you that the old school ones are not the ones that you should be dealing with. That there's a lot of action going on right now. There's a lot of innovation going on right now. I'd be happy to talk to you after and kind of give you some of the key people that could be of assistance. The things that I, and that timeline that I gave, there's that first one, let's call it that first barrier film, all PE in 2015. That was one company, and now everybody's got their own blend version of that. So I would tell you there's opportunities out there. And I applaud your looking and pushing to make that transition, because at the end of the day, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take, whether it's a brand or whatever it may be, making the decision and making the commitment to sustainability. And that's going to be what supports and enables the circular economy conversation moving forward.
Yeah, we'd be happy to connect offline. Yeah. We're here to help. We really want to make this thing work. So, thank you.
All right. That's
all right. Thank you all. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening. It would mean the world if you would take a moment to rate or review this podcast. And if you share it with us on one of our social networks, we are giving out some fun Nothing Wasted podcast swag. So just tag us and see what you get. Thanks so much.